Here on the campus of Utah State University, I've got this book sitting on my desk. It's green, hard-covered, and wider than it is long. It also has some of the best, most detailed paintings of fish in it that I've ever seen. And as a fisheries grad student, I've seen a lot of books on fish. But this particular book is special, not just because it has some sweet pictures in it, but because of who wrote it. This particular book is written by none other than Bob Behnke himself, Dr. Trout. Now, I know you're probably saying, who is Bob Behnke? But don't worry, we'll get back to Bob. First, I want to tell you about lumpers and splitters.
Definition. Splitter. Noun. A biologist who divides groups into smaller categories.
Definition. Lumper. Noun. A biologist who attaches more importance to similarities than to differences when classifying species.
Okay, so let's say we have a group of fish in a river, and that a geologic event creates some sort of barrier on this river so that the fish above and below can no longer breed. Now remember back to biology class, species are always evolving. Since those two groups can no longer interbreed, they'll evolve differently, and if those two groups are separated long enough, they evolve to look so different, the scientists split them into two different species. However, since they share a common ancestor, they might be lumped into a broader category like genus.
How people decide what's a species is often discipline specific. There's long-term arguments about how many species of grass there are, just because there's lots of splitters in the field of botany, and that makes sense. You know, the plants don't run very far. But, you know, with fish, you've got people that tend to lump things because most of these systems are connected.
That's Dr. Brett Roper, the Forest Service National Aquatic Monitoring Program leader and one of my professors at USU. He's also one of the editors of a recent book about cutthroat trout evolution in which Bob Behnke took center stage. You know, Bob, the author of that big green book on my desk with all the nice drawings of fish.
It's pretty neat that what Behnke did by just sort of driving around and looking at individuals is supported by the much more highly technical genetic data. And so it does show you that sort of being a naturalist pays off. Being out there looking, taking your time, thinking about how things work, gets these large-scale patterns really well.
Bob Behnke was a Korean War veteran and a longtime professor at Colorado State, who's probably most famous for researching how cutthroat trout evolved. And before new genetic tools had become widespread, he's able to simply drive around the West and examine cutthroat trout anatomy to determine how cutthroat trout had evolved into different subspecies.
Gill rakers, how many scales along the lateral line, you know, the botting patterns, and then he would figure out how that would nest within sort of the evolution of the landscape. So he'd put those things together in a time that was really difficult to do, and I find it pretty amazing. And even the list of subspecies falls out under the same groups that he had proposed. You know, one of the big things is, depending upon how you count them, there are 13 or 14 of these sort of subgroups under Behnke where, when you look at the genetic data, there's support for more of that around, you know, the sort of mid-20s.
So while Behnke's work got a lot of the cutthroat story right, new genetic data is rewriting some parts. In the book Roper helped edit, some contributing scientists wondered whether the major groups of cutthroat trout that Behnke had called subspecies should actually be considered full species in their own right. But other contributors to the book say that there's just not enough data yet to say if cutthroat trout are actually more than one species.
We are still at a point where I don't know that we can fully draw the lines as to what is what on these subspecies and trying to elevate some to species. I'm Dennis Shozawa. I've just retired from teaching at Brigham Young University. I've been there for a long time.
I called up Dr. Shozawa, a BYU fisheries professor, who explained that figuring out how species separate from distant ancestors and evolve isn't straightforward.
You have this separation taking place continually over a period of at least 10 million years. And some might have separated out at 10 million. Others may have separated out at 5 million years ago. Some may have separated out 100,000 years ago. And so the question is, where along that continuum do you draw the line to say, this is where I'm going to call this a separate species?
Shozawa says we're anywhere from 3 years to a decade away from being able to determine for sure whether cutthroat trout make up more than one species. But this kind of work has real-world consequences for which subspecies or groups of cutthroat are listed as threatened or endangered.
Obviously, going from 13 or 14 subspecies to 24 subspecies can put at play the Endangered Species Act.
That's the Forest Service scientist and USU professor Brett Roper again.
It could go both ways. It could increase the possibilities of listing because you've got more subspecies, but it could lead eventually to the delisting because the genetic information doesn't suggest some of these subspecies were distinct as possible. And again, I think that's one of the products of science. You know, science is a process. We get better and better understandings. It's amazing that someone like Binky, just again driving through, was able to do as well as he has. But you know, no one should expect that that's going to be perfect when you can get down to the genetic information of the individuals. And again, this is better scientific information on how things should be looked at, but it doesn't make the decisions of what should and shouldn't be protected.
I asked Dr. Roper if this work could lead to legal debates about whether some groups of cutthroat trout should be listed as threatened or endangered.
When it already has. I mean, you look at greenback cutthroat trout, some of the issues with sort of misidentification or re-identification. I think that's always going to be in play when you have decisions like Endangered Species Act listings that have economic and ecological impact.
But according to Roper, the major groups of cutthroat trout that may be considered separate species in the future, like West Slope or coastal cutthroat trout, have already been through the process of determining whether they are threatened or endangered.
So it won't affect those. I think it will affect some of these smaller groups that probably warrant more protection because they're small, isolated, and really do need the help of the Endangered Species Act. I do think there's lots of implications of this, but it's just going to take time to play out.
Dr. Roper's new book now sits beside that old green one on my desk. The new one is purple, if you were wondering. A really nice color compliment there. And while the body of work represented by these two volumes will continue to be consequential for the foreseeable future, I'll be here looking at fish drawings and reporting for Utah Public Radio. I'm Niall Clancy.